that's been through similar sort of loss and is still moving forward is a further piece of the puzzle that says, I'm gonna be fine. I can still live life, not in the same way as I was expecting that I would, because I don't have a son that I was fully expecting to have. But it's definitely a way to sort of like give me hope.
Welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. Our aim is to help you own your experience. I'm Catherine Mousley.
And I'm Hayley Manning. Today we're going to be joined by Sara Vincini. Sara is an Italian and lives in London with her husband and son. She has been through a late term TFMR, as well as a miscarriage, and often writes about baby loss on social media and on her blog, Oh Baby, Where Art Thou?
So Hayley, we asked Sara to come on this week because she has had a TFMR and her family live in Italy. So she's been away from her family during a really traumatic experience for her. And I think it struck a chord with both of us too as well, because I don't have my mum nearby. She's in Ireland and you don't have your parents anymore. And particularly, especially during COVID, I think there'd be a lot of people going through a TFMR who can't even see their family, no matter how close they live to them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that came up when we put the questions on, you know, a couple of days ago. And I asked people what their experiences were of having the people that they wanted around them. Were they able to have that? And this is what came up about COVID. And even months have gone by and they've still not been able to see their family. But yeah, you're right. You know, I'm both my parents have now died and I'm Canadian as well. So if they were still alive, then there would have been that physical distance in that respect. But I always sort of fantasize that they would have been on the plane immediately. Yeah. You know, I have no idea if that's what they would have done, but you know, that they would have been on the plane immediately and they would have been at my door and they would have been there with capes on flowing in the wind, you know, here to rescue me. Because that's what I needed. I needed my parents to come and rescue me. I needed my mum to like wrap me up in cotton wool. And I needed my dad to go into Superman mode for me. That's what I needed. And I was really feeling that lacking of their support really badly. I still feel it actually. And 4 years on, I still feel it.
It's really difficult, isn't it? I mean, I remember my mum just saying like, I can get on a plane. And then I was like, oh no, it's fine, don't bother. And your heart wants to go, yes, please. But then part of me felt like, I don't deserve this. It comes back to that theme of being like, you don't deserve support, despite you wanting your mum just to come over and you can sit on the sofa and sit on her knee like you were a child and just sit there and cry. And it is incredibly lonely and an isolating experience anyway, without having those closest loved ones there for support.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder also, it's also the maybe not thinking you deserve the support, but also I think maybe it's the shock of what's happening and that not fully grasping fully what's about to happen as well. So there can be a lot of that sort of, oh no, well, this is for me. I was sort of, I don't know. I just hadn't quite put two and two together until Luna was born, what was fully happening. And I think that was a bit of denial, a bit of shock, a bit of self-protection.
Yeah. I think as well, because I remember thinking, oh, you know, I'm really in the thick of it now. But by the time my mum arrives, I might be over it a little bit.
And then
I don't want her to come here and like stir everything up again.
Exactly.
But in hindsight, looking back now, obviously it's something that takes years to not even overcome. It's just moving forward and processing your grief. I don't think you're ever going to overcome it in that sense.
Yeah. And I wonder also maybe thinking, well, what are they going to do even if they are here?
Exactly.
So one listener wrote and said, oh, her mum did come over and that she felt relief when her mum arrived. And she said, we just played board games. It wasn't anything, because what can anybody do in this situation? It was just that company with somebody who knows you, has known you all your life, obviously.
Exactly. And just the hug. I think a lot of people were missing just the hug because of the lack of physical contact we're allowed to have now.
I mean, let's face it, even if you were able to maybe do a drive by your parents' house in these times and COVID times and wave at them through the window, ain't going to cut it, folks.
No.
Ain't going to cut it. That feels like a good time to bring Sara in.
Yeah.
Sara, thank you for joining us. It's really lovely to have you here.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. So did you want to tell us a little bit about your experience of being here, but being from somewhere else and what that was like?
Yeah, So, you know, I had been living in London for nearly 10 years when I lost Luca. So, because I'm Italian, I'm from Northern Italy, flying to and from London from Milan is quite cheap. It's something that you can do quite often. So my parents were used to come and go pretty regularly, and so was I. So they were actually able to come to London for Luca's birth, and they stayed with us for a couple of days. So, you know, the idea of having them there before they actually arrived, it felt really nice. It felt really sort of like comforting. It felt like that was exactly what I needed.
Yeah.
And when they arrived, they were trying to sort of like be strong for me. And there wasn't really much, like we didn't really talk in detail about what was happening, what was going on, what was going to happen. Because they arrived the morning, I think, of when I was supposed to have the fetal injection to stop Luca's heart. Mm-hmm. And they stay there for the birth that happened two days later. So I think they were... because if they were, you know, in a foreign country, my mom doesn't speak the language, my dad does, but still they weren't in a very familiar place. And of course, they had absolutely no knowledge of like the hospital, the NHS, mm-hmm. and even trying to communicate with the consultant and the nurses wasn't always easy, especially for my mom. And she's quite an anxious person herself. Mm-hmm. And she was there when I gave birth to Luca. And to be honest, that kind of like, that's one of the things that makes me feel the most sort of guilty, because in a way I feel like I could have spared them the trauma of not only knowing what was happening, but actually witnessing, like seeing as it was happening. So my dad wasn't in the room, he was like outside. But apparently he told me that he could hear me scream, and my mom was in the room, but she was shocked.
Yeah.
She was in a state of shock, like literally she was frozen in a corner. She couldn't move, she couldn't talk. It was, and I remember I was having all the contractions, so I was feeling all this like really, really intense pain that was completely unknown to me. And I knew that I was about to give birth to a baby that was dead. And I kept looking at my mom and seeing her like that made me feel absolutely, it made me feel horrendous. It made me feel, I was like, what am I doing to her? Why am I putting her through this? But then I was like, okay, but she's my mom. I need her.
Yeah.
Even if she's like this right now, I need her. And it's okay. I mean, it's good for us to be together right now. We will go through this. We will hopefully recover from it. So it was different from what I imagined, but I think that not having them there at all would have probably been worse for me, but maybe not for them, because when Luca was born, they were able to hold him, you know, they saw him, we took pictures, they cried. I hadn't seen my dad cry in a really, really long time. And another really, you know, interesting thing was that Luca looked a lot like my dad. And we all realized this straight away, including him. It was honestly like the spitting image of my dad, even though he was only 26 weeks. But yeah, we all agree that he looked a lot like him. So I can only begin to imagine like what it would have felt like for him to hold his first grandson that looks so much like him, but he was dead. And, you know, in a different country, in a hospital that he had absolutely no knowledge of, with his daughter in that sort of like state. I was on morphine, so I was absolutely completely spaced out for hours and hours and hours. So yeah, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and so when I was speaking about my fantasy of my parents being there with me.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of recognize it as a fantasy. It's like, I have my expectation of what it would have been like if my parents had been able to be there, if not necessarily in the room with me, but afterwards, you know, my expectation of what it might be like, that fantasy, I realize could really different from in reality. And I think that that's what you're talking about, that, you know, you had this idea of what it can be or should be, but reality is something else. And the fact that our parents are people too, and they're watching their child
exactly
in a very distressing situation. that they are, like you said, powerless to do anything for.
And I think that throughout the whole pregnancy, because the problem started at the very, very beginning, it was a completely sort of like fraught pregnancy right from the start. But they were trying to be really positive. My dad was doing a lot of reading. He suddenly became like a fetal cardiologist, and my mom became a geneticist. They were like doing all this Googling and talking to friends that were doctors and calling people here and there. So they were really, really convinced that all would be good in the end. But when I called them to say, no, this, you know, this is the final diagnosis, this is what's going to happen, I think that must have been incredibly traumatic for them.
Yeah, it sounds like they were really trying to do their parental duty by reading up and getting information, figuring it out, being positive, and then to be dealt that sort of blow that, no, this is, you can't fix this. It's really heartbreaking. And so your parents stayed for a little while afterwards, or how
soon? Just a few days. Okay. Yeah, just a few days. I think it was a 5 or 6 days. Yeah. Mm.
And then, because I think, you know, TFMR happens in these stages. We have our actual TFMR, but then it's the journey afterwards. Yeah. And what was that like living in London? Okay, you've been here for a long time. You've obviously built up friendship circles and whatnot. What's it like not having old friendships or your parents and family processing what's happened with you?
I mean, the funny thing is that, well, not funny really, but most of my friends, like close friends that I made in London, or people that were living in Italy and then they moved to London a few years later, in between sort of like 2016 and 2018, they all moved away. So I kind of like suddenly found myself with like 2/3 close friends and my husband's friends, because my husband is from London, so his mom lives here, he has most of his friends, they all live here, so it was already I already felt quite lonely. And because, as I was saying, the pregnancy itself was very, very problematic right from, I would say, week sort of 10-11. I didn't do what I would have normally done, which was go to, like, I don't know, pregnancy yoga or meeting other expectant moms and trying to like meet people in a similar sort of situation to myself, because I was in so stressed and so anxious the whole pregnancy that there was no space at all for new relationships, for nice kind of like things to do, like mom and baby, expectant mom and baby groups and that sort of stuff. So I was completely unable to meet new people. And there were a few of my friends, both in London and abroad, that were actually pregnant at the same time as I was. And, you know, when I found out that I was pregnant, I was like, okay, that's great, because, you know, I have a few more friends that would you like similar dates? But then I sort of like stopped talking to them as well. Yeah. So it was incredibly isolating. And I mean, as I was saying, I had 2 or 3 friends left basically in London, and they all lived hours away, because London is like my hometown.
Yeah, exactly.
We can, like, literally walk everywhere. So I couldn't really see them. So we were in the same city and we were talking pretty much on a daily basis, but we couldn't really actually see each other much. So yeah, it was really, really difficult.
It sounds very lonely and isolating.
Yeah. And I mean, the following weeks, when my parents were here, in a way, I couldn't really, I don't know how to say this, but I couldn't really actually come to terms fully with what I had just been through. Partly, I guess, because my body recovered really well and really quickly. So I wasn't like bedridden, or I didn't really have any massive sort of postpartum symptoms or anything. And partly because my parents were here, so we were probably busy. I don't even remember that very well, to be honest with you. Like, but I'm guessing that we were kind of busy going for walks and trying to, like, maybe going out for dinner, that sort of stuff. I remember I drank quite a bit. That's like what I do remember. But then when they left and my husband went back to work after, about a couple of weeks and days, I was like, now I am completely, utterly on my own. And on one day particularly, I felt so desperate that I was like tidying up what was supposed to be Luca's nursery. And I felt so desperate. My husband was out, I think, with a friend, and I was meant to join them later. So I found myself at home on my own for about an hour or so. And at that moment, it was about 3 weeks after losing Luca, I literally collapsed, physically collapsed on the floor of his nursery. And I couldn't breathe. I think I had a panic attack, and I was thinking, what do I do? Who can I call? I can't call my parents because they're going to freak out completely. I don't want to call Daniel because, you know, he's with his friend. I don't want to worry him and stuff. So I ended up calling Samaritans because genuinely I didn't know. I knew I had to talk to someone just to get through those moments and to start sort of breathing again. Yeah. And I thought, who can I call? There must be some, like, you know, like an association. So, and then I remember, yeah, there's this charity, and I called them straight away, and it really did help. And then I kind of like got better. But yeah, and then I mean, a couple of friends came to visit me just for a weekend a few months later. But yeah, I mean, again, it was like the idea that I had to say goodbye after just a few days and go back to my life in London on maternity leave, because I was on maternity leave for 6 months. I was like, yeah, I'm back square one. Like, I haven't got, you know, I'm on maternity leave, I haven't got a baby, I can't really go to like postpartum classes or groups, or what can I do with myself? And yeah,
it's really difficult, isn't it? I think that's when it 3 weeks is about the time it starts to set in.
Yeah,
and the grief starts to set in, and then you are almost expected just to rejoin normal life, and don't know how to do that. I think in our case, like, no one really knew we were pregnant, so then you can't tell anyone afterwards because it's just, you're opening up the whole story, and then what do you say to people?
Yeah,
and you just, you like, you're drifting, I think, and you're just a bit lost, and you don't know, especially I guess when you are on maternity leave, you don't have that work to fill that void, and you don't have a baby to show for it. And it's,
yeah, I mean, my job was not the most supportive of places at all. They made me redundant as well a few months later. So that's a different story, I guess. So, but yeah, I you're right. I craved something to fill my hours. And I guess that's when I started really sort of like writing and blogging and connecting a lot with other moms on Instagram. That was a really crucial point, I think.
I think the power of Instagram for baby loss is very underrated.
Yeah.
And that's where most people tend to make their connections. I mean, obviously where Hayley and I met as well, is via Instagram, and it's just such a huge community of people, and you just don't realize what resources are out there until you start to delve into it as well.
And I mean, I was able to meet so many amazing women, but particularly there's a group of other Italian TFMR moms that I'm still really, really close to, like nearly 3 years later. And actually one is due with a rainbow baby, like literally any minute now. So yeah, I mean, it was really amazing not just to talk about this with someone that had been through it and really, really could get it, but someone that could also speak my own language. And
I was going to ask that. I think that that's really important what you're just saying there about this cultural link, because I think we all have our differences and diversities there, and I think that that's really important. I don't know if maybe you could share if that's a sort of group that's on Instagram or.
Yeah, so it's actually, it's not, I mean, I call it a group, but it's not like a structure group. It's just one of these women, I met her actually on Facebook, on a closed group on Facebook, that, to be honest, I wasn't really that involved with. But I met two of these women on that group, and then another one on Instagram. So as far as I know, there is no actual group for sort of like Italian women going through.
No, I think you're probably right there. But I wonder maybe what we could do is just, because we'll put how people can contact you.
Yeah.
And then maybe that in through that way. But I'm just wondering, you know, do you think that there's any ways culturally you might deal with things differently or not? Well, or is it purely just being able to speak the same language and it being easier in that sense?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, the language part is something quite important, but Italy is really, really backwards in terms of abortion rights.
I was going to ask that, actually. Is it quite religious?
And actually, yeah, it is very religious, but it's not just that. Like, so abortion is legal, but at the same time, healthcare professionals have the right to choose not to perform an abortion simply based on the fact that they don't want to.
Yeah.
That their sort of like faith or belief or whatever you want to call it prevents them from doing something like that. So okay. There's lots and lots of women who are actually entitled to an abortion, whether for medical reasons or not, but they can't have it. And actually after, I think 20, I'm not sure if it's 22 or 24 weeks, because I've been reading like different things, but definitely after 24 weeks, it's actually illegal to terminate a pregnancy, even if that means that the mom or the baby might die as a result of continuing
really?
The pregnancy. Yeah, yeah. So actually one of the women that I met on this Facebook group, she had to go abroad to terminate her pregnancy because she was, I think she was 26 weeks like me. And the way she told me she was treated in Italy by doctors, gynecologists, nurses, she was called a murderer on many occasions.
Jeez.
And yeah, and it was absolutely awful, absolutely awful. And so she had to go abroad, you know, pay for traveling there and staying there. And luckily she spoke the language of the country. So she was able to speak to the healthcare staff. But, you know, it's just
I can't wrong,
even begin
it?
To imagine like what it must have felt. Because if I can say one sort of positive thing about my experience was the way I was treated was amazing. Like it was absolutely outstanding. Like the NHS staff at the hospital were like literally from the first to the last, they were all wonderful, and they treated us with so much like compassion and care. And it didn't seem to matter to them that Luca was already dead because of the way they were so like gentle and delicate with all of us, and even with my parents, that they could see them, they were in complete shock. So yeah, I was, you know, I was telling these girls about my experience and hearing from them about their experience in either Italy or abroad was just really, really painful. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's really shocking that we're in 2021 and this is what some women are still contending with and having to go through.
It's like that stigma thing though, once it sticks, you know, it's so difficult to get rid of it.
Yeah. It's a smell that sticks, definitely. I think that, again, that idea of culturally being able to be with the people that understand your culture is also, so even though your experience was different, Sara, you understand because you are Italian, you grew up there. Yeah. So you understand more fully what's going on. And a comfort, I think, to those women who have been through a bad experience, but, you know, just being able to band together.
Yeah. And I mean, the idea that if I had been living in Italy, I wouldn't have been able to terminate my pregnancy. It was just, I just couldn't bear to imagine, like, you know, what life would have been like for all of us. Mm. Horrendous, really.
Yeah. And it's that thing, it, like, it doesn't bear thinking of, really, does it?
Yeah.
I mean, there will be people that won't have the money to travel.
Exactly.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to your blogging and writing.
Yeah.
Because you spoke about how that became an outlet for you. And the other thing I've noticed that you do is you write, but you'll also suggest a piece of music to go with reading what you've written. Can you just talk about that a little bit? I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I love music. I am really, really obsessed with music. And the very few good memories I have of Luca's pregnancy are in fact associated with either going to concerts or listening to specific songs or artists. And then when I got pregnant with my rainbow baby, Federico, again, I spent the whole pregnancy just playing music to him. And now he is 20 months old and he sings like bits of songs that we listen to together. And it just makes me so, so happy. It's just like, I love music. I love writing, and I found music throughout my life, literally, like right from when I was a teenager. I always found it really therapeutic, which, you know, lots and lots of us, I think, do. But especially live music. Like live music, if you had asked me, like, what is your favorite thing to do on a weekend, I would have definitely answered, like, going to a gig. And this is one of the things that I miss the most, like, at the moment, like, not being able to go to, like, live music concerts and stuff like that. So yeah, it's each, I think each piece of music that I sort of recommend, let's say, with my blogs is not like a random sort of choice.
Mm.
It is connected to what the blog is about, what that specific blog is about, or, you know, some like a song that I was listening to in a specific part of my pregnancy loss experience or postpartum. So they're all really sort of thought through quite like carefully. And I have a playlist as well on my phone of all the songs. I played actually when I was in labor with Luca, and I still play occasionally, like not very often because it brings me to tears quite easily. But yeah, it's just like one of my favorite things to do ever in life is listen to music, going to concerts, and that's one of the things that I sort of clung to when we got diagnosis and when we lost Luke, and after we lost him, it was kind of like a piece of myself that I really needed to like keep strong, and I really wanted to feel connected to that Sarah, the Sarah that used to, you know, go to gigs and have fun and listen to music and meet new people through music. I used to sort of write song. I used to sing in a band many, many years ago. So it was a way to like, I guess, also remain sort of close to my roots, to like, even like to my country, to, yeah, like have like good memories of carefree days.
Yeah.
And sounds like a really good grounding technique as well, though. Because it's like,
yeah,
drown in literally the grief and the trauma, and that is something to keep you grounded. To
and I think that I never, however low I felt throughout this past few years, throughout Luca's loss, listening to, you know, the right type of music, right type of song at the right time, I mean, it made me feel like I was never alone, even if I was like physically alone in a room, crying my eyes out a few days after giving birth to Luca. But if I chose a specific piece of music, I instantly felt like I was sort of cuddled by someone, like surrounded with, I don't know, like love and comfort and understanding and hope things will get better. You're still here. This is still you. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is, you know, if this is the sort of like profound thing that I wanted to convey when I decided to add like the music recommendations to the blog. Probably not. but yeah, I think that, yeah, there is a reason for that.
Yeah, I think there is something quite profound in that, actually, because I think what you're saying is that music was a friend for you.
Yeah.
And also what I heard you say a few moments ago was that music is a real part of you. And we lose so much in TFMR of ourselves. It all becomes quite tenuous.
Yeah.
And it felt like what you were saying, well, I think you said it quite clearly, I had to hold on to music. This was a big part of myself I did not want to lose. And I wondered about that feeling of, will I ever be me again?
Yeah.
Or will I ever be happy again? You know, you mentioned hope. Yeah. And I just, it sounds like it was something really important for your grieving process.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, particularly there was this one band that I talk about in my blog. They're called Idols. They're from Bristol. And I had been listening to them for a while already. Actually, I'd been listening to them through my miscarriage the previous year. So they already carried that kind of like meaning, a strong meaning for my healing back then. And then I remember like straight after getting Luca's diagnosis and unfortunately deciding to terminate the pregnancy, I was reading an article in The Guardian, an interview with the lead singer. And I was just expecting, you know, just to read your usual article about like sort of like this band, they are getting quite big and they're touring Europe or whatever it was. But in fact, at one point, Joe, the singer, was talking about the fact that the previous year, he and his partner had lost a baby during labor. So the baby was stillborn, and the new album was coming out a few weeks later, and he was saying that there will be, you know, a song specifically about this experience, but the whole album will be very, very sort of quite heavy in that sense with grief. And so I completely out of blue, I decided to reach out to him on Instagram, in fact, and, you know, say to him that I just read the article and that I was like quite shocked. And I just like briefly explained what was happening in my life and the fact that I was still pregnant with this baby, but this baby was so poorly that we had decided to terminate the pregnancy, but I was already, you know, quite far ahead with the pregnancy, mm-hmm. and I will have to go through labor and give birth to the baby. And he replied, so we started like sort of chatting like that, and he messaged me the night before actually I got admitted to the hospital for the induction, just to say, we're all thinking about you, mm-hmm. be strong. And then, believe it or not, like exactly a week later, or yeah, 8 days later, after I lost Luca, I decided to go to one of the concerts here in London. Mm-hmm. My husband was like, are you sure? I mean, you're still, you know, you're still kind of recovering. I mean, as mm-hmm. I said, I was fine physically. I didn't have any massive symptoms or anything, but, you know, I was like 1 week postpartum.
Yeah.
And he said, maybe it's not, you know, the best idea to go to like a punk rock gig in East London. I was like, no, I want to do it. I want to yeah. go. I need to do it. So we went with his best friend as well. And I think I've got a blog as well about this. At the very end of the concert, he said, this song is for my friend Sarah, who is going through a really difficult time. And the three of us, me, my husband and his friend, sort of looked at each other. We all like burst into tears and we like hugged. And then after the concert, we managed to speak to Joe a bit. And yeah, and then we, you know, we keep in touch still now occasionally. It's just created this kind of connection through music. Yeah. And the song that he wrote for his daughter, I have to say that I can't always listen to it. When I listen to the album, sometimes I have to skip the song. That's how powerful it is. Mm-hmm. Not just the lyrics, it's beautiful. It's absolutely, it's an amazing song. But they would never perform it live, he said. So it's very, very powerful, very intense. Mm. But yeah, again, I'm glad that I found this person as well, because each person you meet that's been through, you know, similar sort of loss and is still, you know, alive and moving forward and healing is, in a way, that's the way I see it, is like a kind of, is a further piece of the puzzle that says, I'm going to be fine. You know, yeah. I can still live life, not in the same way as I used to, and not in the same way as I was expecting that I would, because I don't have a son that I was fully expecting to have. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a way to kind of like, to sort of like give me hope.
Mm. Speaking of connections, do you know, when you've obviously posted a blog post and then connected this bit of music, have you had anyone else reach out, and what are the responses been like?
So yeah, I had a couple of my Instagram friends actually say, I didn't know most of the songs, but I made an actual effort to play them every time I read the blog, and they were all like, they all thought that it was quite kind of helpful to really almost like get into my head, like put themselves in my shoes, because like some of the pieces are like, I think there's something by Vivaldi, so there's all sorts of things. It's not just like pop music or rock, or some of that is instrumental, so there's no lyrics to it. So yeah, a couple of people actually have said that they thought it was quite interesting and quite a nice thing to do.
Has that been quite powerful for you then, like the power of social media and that connection?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been able to write on my blog for quite a long time, because, you know, I now have a 20-month-old.
Yeah, it took a lot of time.
That is, incredibly, incredibly lively and demanding. But I'm slowly planning to get back to writing, because I write poetry as well, a little bit, and maybe add some of that as well to the blog, some of the poems.
That would be really nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, I find music very powerful and quite triggering in some places.
Yeah.
So to connect all those together could be a really creative way to help process your grief and then help others heal in the same way.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, you used a word that is really powerful, like triggering. I think sometimes I feel like I want to be triggered by listening to a song, because in a way it's like, this is my moment to be connected to my grief and to be connected to my son.
Yeah.
And if it happens through this specific song, and if it means that I'm gonna spend 10, 15 minutes listening to this song and crying and reminiscing and whatnot, then it's fine. I'm not shying away from that. I'm not really using music to sort of like pull myself up and cheer myself up and have fun. Sometimes it's actually the opposite. I need
that release.
I need to have like a companion. I need to have like a shoulder to cry on, but not an actual person. You know, I don't know, this song.
We've gone back to music being your friend again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's quite healthy. I think it's a very healthy way to deal with it, because you recognize that you've obviously got this feeling.
Yeah.
And instead of pushing it away and it coming back to bite you twice as hard later, you're actually dealing with it there and then and knowing what works for you as well.
Embracing it.
Yeah.
And I think we do all need to embrace it. We need to release this. And I think that's, you know, I'm 4 years on post TFMR and I'm still needing to embrace and release some of the grief that comes up. It's a constant, I don't think that'll ever go away, to be honest. Yeah. I think that's it for the rest of my life now, is I'm going to be constantly sort of going through this cycle of grief. And you're right, any sort of outlet that allows you to connect with it, because that's the other thing, we're talking about connection. It's music is allowing you to connect with your grief and your love for your son. And to really feel it, it's still there, and it's good to know that it's still there. I kind of go, I don't ever want it to not, you know.
Yeah,
that's not good either. I want to know that I can still I'm still wanting Luna.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, this has meant in some cases like not being able to listen to, you know, what used to be one of my favorite bands without making the connection with Luca. Mm-hmm. So I've been listening to some like bands and singers for many, many years, but they have now a connection with Luca, partly because, you know, we went to see Pearl Jam when I was 20 weeks pregnant with him. And it was one of the best memories I have of the pregnancy. So now whenever I listen to Pearl Jam and specific songs, you know, it's Luca, it's him, even though I was 14 when I discovered them and I started listening to them. But it's fine. I mean, I accept that, and yeah, I think it is quite healthy. I think it is. Yeah.
Also gives you that sense of closure as well, maybe. You know, like if it's so raw, you know a way you can quickly make yourself feel a bit better by connecting to those memories.
Yeah.
And then you get that sense of closure afterwards until almost like the wave comes back again, because they come around, don't they?
And it makes me feel like happy. Well, happy. It makes me feel, I don't know how else to sort of like describe the feeling, but knowing that I took Luca to those concerts, and my brother plays in a band as well, and we managed to go and see them play a few times when I was playing with him. Knowing that is like, you know, oh wow, it's Luca's been to see Pearl Jam, Luke has been to see my brother's band. It's such a like a nice warm feeling, almost like a gift that I gave him. Because when you lose a baby, especially with a TFMR, because of the whole like guilt that comes with the decision and all the what ifs, I think that any tiny sort of gift that we can give to our babies is huge. And we all have, you know, our individual ones, and in my case is music, you know, going to a concert or doing some writing or writing a poem and that sort of stuff. It's like the little things that you can do for them as their mom.
I think that's really beautiful. I think it'd be a good time to go to our takeaways. We ask this of all of our guests. What advice or piece of hope would you give to women or families who are either facing TFMR or who have undergone a TFMR?
I think that, as I was saying, trying to maybe find even like one tiny thing that keeps you sort of grounded and keeps you connected to your old self, whatever that might be, whether it's music, or it could be literally anything else, baking, reading, writing,
baking
exactly. It doesn't even have to be anything particularly creative, I don't think, you know, just walking through the woods or going to, I don't know, that sort of stuff that reminds you who you are. And to be honest, I know it's really, really difficult for some people, because I met many, many people that went through a TFMR that messaged me privately saying, I can't talk to anyone about this. I can't post on social media. I haven't even told some of my family members. I really think it's important to talk, even if it's just one person on social media, someone that you don't even know the name of or something like that. I think it's really, really crucial to share your story, your baby, your feelings, anything. And even better if it's someone that's already kind of been through, you know, let's say
further down the track.
I'm still getting lots of messages occasionally from women saying, I have just been through this, or someone actually contacted me last year during the first wave of the pandemic, and she's saying, I'm gonna have to go through this, like, during the pandemic on my own. And I said to her, just, do you want to give me a call? So literally we didn't know each other at all, and we spoke on the phone for a bit. There are still family members of hers that have no idea what she went through, really. Yeah. They know that she lost a baby. But she said that it really, really did help to talk to someone that had been through it. So I think that is something that's incredibly, incredibly helpful.
It's that thing that, you know what, you are not alone. We keep doing that hashtag on all of these, on the episode and everything. Yeah. You are not alone. And it is incredibly isolating. So reach out to those people who do understand. If you don't have it within your own circle, reach out to the people who do understand.
Including us.
Incredibly important. Exactly. Including us. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Sarah. It's been a really insightful episode. And I think it's taken a bit of a different twist to just talk about music in terms of TFMR and how to heal and your grief. I just want to remind everyone they can subscribe to us. You can also follow us on social media, which is Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Time to Talk TFMR. Please let us know your thoughts, experiences, and any ideas for future episodes.
That's it for now. We hope that you will join us next time. Take care of yourselves out there.
Thank you. Bye-bye.